what's going down, and you're invited.
Disenfranchised people are set to explode.
Okay, we're back. We're joined again with Michael from West Virginia. Michael's one of the teachers that are on strike. We had Michael on the program about 10 days ago. It seems like we were just saying how much time has passed since those 10 days. But we're going to do an audio report on what's been going on in West Virginia. And Michael, we were just hoping that you could take us back to Tuesday when they offered the 5% increase and the news media was kind of elated that the strike was going to be over. And then, of course, it wasn't. So if you can just kind of take us back to that and what happened.
Yeah, so when Justice announced he made this deal with union leadership, we were all pretty much taken by surprise. I mean, I was telling a lot of people, you know, I don't think the strike's going to end anytime soon, because the day before he was just touring the state telling everyone literally that they were rednecks. He was worried that people were going to shoot him. I mean, he was just riling people up. So when he came out on Tuesday and said he made this deal, we were all saying, you know, what? We couldn't believe this happened. So to be honest, pretty much everything that happened from there was people were furious. They were furious that union leadership had done this deal. I mean, the secret Facebook page immediately was blowing up. The West Virginia IWW page that I manage, we released a statement that was very critical of this compromise deal for 5%, and just a blanket statement on this task force to help fix PEIA. So we released a statement saying, you know, the workers are rejecting this. You union leadership are in your positions of power because you're paid with union dues. So how dare you go ahead behind our backs and make this deal against our wishes? And on Wednesday, what was funny was counties were all sending out emails and phone calls saying how excited they were that people were going to go back on Thursday, that, you know, we made this deal, huzzah. And you could see even in the corporate media, people were saying the deal had been struck, you know, people are going back to work. And on the West Virginia Department of Education site, you could see the map of West Virginia slowly turn red again as counties started closing and closing and closing. And even some counties in the north and the eastern panhandle were getting calls at like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night by their superintendents who were saying, look, we thought schools were going to be open on Thursday, but we can't open them. We don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, they were calling saying, we don't know when this is going to be resolved, so we're probably going to have to close the rest of the week. So it's pretty much been a countywide effort to keep union leadership's feet to the fire since the Tuesday deal.
So what was the process like of people actively rejecting that deal and then deciding that they were not going to show up for work on Wednesday? How did that process take place?
There's the possibility of creating strike committees, and I would say some of these communities created their own impromptu strike committees without officially designating them as such, but they have their own secret Facebook groups. So different counties have different Facebook groups that are secret to that county and that school, kind of modeled off this secret Facebook group that got people ignited. And people were posting saying, you know, we have to have a meeting tonight. We have to find a time to all gather together and decide if we're going to accept this or we're going to go back to school. What will local leadership say? So pretty much all the county leadership, all the county presidents were gone to Charleston on Wednesday. And while they were gone, they asked people not to go back to the picket lines because it was supposed to be a cooling off period. Well, instead of going to the picket lines, a lot of people in the county were posting on their secret Facebook groups, trying to find times and places where they could meet and vote and determine what was going to continue to happen. So on Wednesday, some counties just met in public areas, places people were already going to picket, and had impromptu votes and said, do we accept this deal or not? it was resoundingly rejected across the state. And then they alerted their county leadership and said, we're not accepting this deal. So you better tell Dale Lee and Christine Campbell from WVEA and AFT that we're not going back to school. So we don't care what deal they're talking about. We're not going. They better form a picket line or they better cancel school because it ain't happening.
And this is Wednesday.
This was Wednesday, yeah, the right. quote-unquote cooling off period that Jim Justice had asked for.
Right, and then going into Thursday and then today, you know, the process was supposed to be, like you said, there was going to be a cooling off period and then workers were supposed to go back on Thursday. Obviously, that did not happen, and the strike continued into Thursday and Friday. So what happened over Thursday and then today? Today, there was talk that there was going to be some sort of occupation or people that were going to be out at the Capitol. Obviously, that did happen. People were on the grounds and were protesting. So what's been happening over the last 2 days?
Well, Thursday, we had decided we were going to wait and see what the House and the Senate decided to do, if they were going to move on any of these bills for the proposed pay raise. And the Senate pretty much did what we thought they would do. There was talk that the Senate was just going to adjourn preemptively. They weren't going to consider this pay raise for 5%, and they're pretty much trying to stall and stall and stall until injunctions could come down. And sure enough, on Thursday, after the House, I think, had passed a pay raise bill, I want to say it was on Wednesday, 98-1, the Senate just stalled. They tabled the bill yesterday. They tabled it again today. They wouldn't let the Senate Finance Committee meet. So on Thursday, because they refused to make the deal that was supposedly won on Wednesday or on Tuesday, people just decided, well, you confirmed our fears. You know, you told us to go back to work on Tuesday. You said you had made this deal, that they were going to pass it. They just needed to run through the numbers. So show us the numbers. And the Senate decided on Thursday to adjourn without looking at the numbers. They tabled it. They claimed it was to run the numbers through their attorneys before they voted on anything. But we knew that that was a stall tactic. They did the same thing today. And what happened today was people were so furious at the fact that this entire week has been sort of just this giant kerfuffle. No one knew what was happening at any point. We were trying to get updates on our United page, and the anger was so palpable that one of the founders of the Facebook page, Jay O'Neill, he posted a question to the Facebook page and said, all right, guys, what's going to happen? Do you want to occupy the building? And I was one of the first people to jump in and say, yes. You know, I couldn't be there at the time, but I said, you know, if you guys do this, I'm heading down right now. And there was a verbal vote by people who were at the Capitol to occupy it. I wasn't there at the time, so I can't tell you what changed. But what we saw on the page were some people who were saying, all right, it's not that we disagree with that idea, but if we do this, it's going to have to happen after the weekend, maybe on Monday, so that we make sure people know over the weekend this is what we plan to do, so bring supplies. So I think what had happened was people at the Capitol decided, all right, the anger's there, we have a lot of people here, but we need to make sure that if we plan on doing this, we're prepared. I was worried that they were going to use this as an attempt to start doing mass arrests. I think we had talked last time, there were reports that police at the Capitol were given a broad authority to start mass arresting people. They wouldn't be held liable if people were injured or killed in the process, and it would give them these sort of not extrajudicial powers, but something similar. And that same day, actually today, the Senate voted to give police officers and correctional officers a $2,000 pay raise each year for the next 3 years, but continue to table bills for education personnel, service personnel. So we figured what they were trying to do is divide and conquer. Give the militarized police force these additional funds, basically get them in their back pocket, say, we're on your side, now go arrest these poor teachers out here, get them off the premises. And we now made a law that says you can do that. So what they decided to do instead of occupying the Capitol is they want everyone they can get down there to the Capitol tomorrow, Saturday, March 3rd, at 9:30 in the morning. That's when the Senate Finance Committee is planning on meeting and running over some numbers to make sure that they can actually perform this pay raise. So they're trying to pack the Capitol this weekend. A lot of what will happen probably early next week is dependent upon what happens this weekend.
And you say the pay raise, you mean the 5% proposed pay raise, right?
Yes, that one.
Okay, so they're still hoping to basically enforce the deal that nobody wants.
That's the plan. They want the 5% pay raise. Pretty much they want it at least now, if not for the next few years. By our estimates, I think it would be about $10,000 if they did 5% every year for the next 5 years. It'd right. be about $10,000 increase, making it roughly similar to all surrounding states in terms of like average pay for teachers in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. So it would get us where we needed to be. And we wanted them to have a long-term revenue stream for the public employees insurance plan. And pretty much every bill they've proposed has been a regressive tax. They've talked about increasing sales tax. They've talked about increasing sugary drink tax. They've talked about any number of regressive tax structure. And even when they tried to do that, we said the money's still not there. You have to tax these oil and natural gas companies. Create a severance tax. About 1% severance tax equals about $40 million in increased revenue. But the legislature is so in the back pocket of these guys that they are so unwilling to pass any type of bill, any type of tax that affects their largest donors. And people in this state, like when I was going through the picket lines, you could talk to someone who has died in the wool, Republican, conservative, you know, voted for Trump in the election, you name it. And these same people were talking about how god-awfully corrupt this state legislature was, how they couldn't wait to vote them all out, to join something that was focused on working class solidarity. I mean, they were fired up. They were ready. And you can see that in these economically depressed parts of the state. Like, they are furious. And that furor is just – it's, you can reach out and touch it here.
Yeah, and I was wondering if we could touch on that. You know, the folks with the Holler Network, which is an anti-fascist coalition, they tweeted out something yesterday I thought was very, very on point. They said Appalachia as quote Trump country is a convenient narrative so reporters in their comfortable liberal enclaves can place blame elsewhere rather than acknowledge that white supremacy runs through this whole country. We are fighting. Stop wagging fingers and start fighting with us. And I'm just curious if you can just talk to, you know, people that you're meeting out there that may have voted for Trump or kind of may have been swayed by certain things and now they're seeing something different. Like, how are you seeing people's consciousness change on the ground?
Yeah, funny you should mention that, because I was actually on the lines yesterday talking with someone, and he said, you know, I voted for Jim Justice just because he's like, you know, we had a Democrat or a Republican, and he thought that what Jim Justice was saying, at least on surface, at least appealed to him in terms of being pro-education, willing to talk with the unions and work with them to stop any type of reactionary legislation. And he said, you know, we got swindled. And he said he's conservative, and there were some things he said that maybe didn't fully align with where we want to be with healthcare. But at least when I was talking with him, some of the things I could see were, you know, this state has been economically devastated by the Democrats for generations. I mean, in 1990, when the teacher strike happened, it was a Democratic governor and a Democratic attorney general that were bringing down the hammers against the teachers. And it wasn't until, like, I think 2012 or 2014 that Republicans took over the legislature. So we've had a long history of Democratic incompetence in this state. And now that the Republican Party is showing that they're equally as incompetent when they're trying to run things, I think what the people in the state are realizing is it's not about voting one party out and bringing another party in. It's about the mutual aid, the community structure that they're seeing with their fellow workers that is going to transform the social and the economic state in this region. So, I mean, talking with him and talking with some other people across the state, that's sort of been the narrative that I saw, that they voted for someone like Trump or Jim Justice because they were so tired of listening to standard politicians give their standard talk and then go right back to stabbing them in the back, you know, come next election year. So I think that by centering our conversation now around the fact that both parties suck, you know, and that electoral politics, if you're only focused on change through the electoral political strategies, that it's a dead end. You have to build that people power, that grassroots democracy, and build it from below to make change. That is receptive across this state.
You know, I think one thing people have been asking is that when this began, there was talk, like right when teachers started to strike, there was some bill that was being voted on about giving police the power to break up like unruly demonstrations and riots and even use, you know, extreme deadly force. And there was also something that was tweeted out today that, that said that they were giving police officers a raise. I'm just curious if you can kind of speak to all this stuff, like whether just the fear that the police are going to come in and like just start cracking heads, or and also just the reality, you know, what is actually happening on the ground? Are they getting ready to really kind of come in there and start repressing people?
Well, it's a difficult subject to broach because this state, being the predominantly white homogenous state that it is, conservative as it is, as anti-establishment as they are, they're still very much in favor of the police force pretty much through and through. I mean, you can't go anywhere without seeing that thin blue line sticker or flag or somewhere, you know, on someone's car or out the window or whatever the case is. So when I was having this conversation with a fellow worker yesterday, we were talking about bringing up the subject of why we're distrustful of police within the context of West Virginia and Appalachia broadly. So what I was telling him was, right now, like, we realize, those of us who are class conscious, why the police force shouldn't be trusted, they're class traitors, etc. Those of us who understand it, I wanted to make it clear, like, there's going to come a point where they're going to divide us using the militarized police force that they have at their disposal. And I told him, we need to be prepared that when that happens, we can say, and this is why we're fearful of the police force. This is why we don't let them into our meetings. This is why when we talk about public employees, you know, we can't be so broad as to include the defenders of capital, because they're the ones who will enforce the law that our masters are trying to impose on us. So it seems like the biggest focal point, if there was going to be any type of mass arrest, would occur at the Capitol. And with this combined pay raise and the updating of that 1933 law that would allow Capitol Police this increased authority, I don't want to predict anything, because I mean, we're taking this day by day. But I do seriously have a fear that if there is no movement on these bills, which I really don't have any faith in at this point, teachers will get so frustrated that they could possibly occupy the Capitol building. And in the event that happens, the Attorney General will then demand that the police, or someone else will demand that the police, begin mass arresting teachers and hauling them off, fining them. So it's not unheard of that something like this could theoretically happen. Probably wouldn't happen on picket lines, probably wouldn't happen all across the state, but there are definitely centers and pockets of resistance, specifically within the Capitol, that could see mass arrests fairly soon.
Yeah, I have a feeling that that would backfire on them, that this would, at this point, that this would, that would probably make this situation grow. And that there's, you know, there's other labor struggles, especially with teachers, that are going on right now or on the verge of popping off. So I think that would just push things even farther. But I'm curious if you can speak now to just I know we covered this last time, and this has kind of been something that's been in the news more, but just the continued mutual aid that teachers have showed with students collecting food and distributing it in their communities. How has that kind of continued since the last time we talked?
Pretty much. I mean, it's continued on a daily basis. There's been articles in sort of the national press talking about teachers that have begun showing up at nonprofits, food distribution centers, pretty much on a daily basis. Speaking personally, I can tell you that I've been in contact with our county's extended day services coordinator, who's put me into contact with some of the local nonprofits in the area, some churches and other groups, and I pretty much check in with them on a daily basis to see where they need people, what they want me to post on the different pages that I either run or where I know people need to get the word out. I send out mass texts. I try to alert people to where they need them for that day. So there's sort of an organic development that's happening across the state where if you can't make it to the Capitol, you make it to the picket lines. And if you can't make it to the picket lines, then you make it to a food distribution center to distribute food, or you bring food to the center and you help sort, or you do something to help your community that day. So it's not seen as like just a day off. So it's pretty much been happening across the state. And like we said last time, there, as far to my knowledge, there hasn't been a single family that has complained and been verified that they have not been able to access food services during the duration of this work stoppage. There's been significant community support to make sure kids are fed, families are fed. All businesses have pretty much opened up their buildings to these kids, and this outpouring of support has been phenomenal. So that's continued, and they've done a pretty good job with maintaining that support.
Do you think thinking of this thing historically now, I mean, it seems like the genie is kind of out of the bottle, and, you know, so to speak, even if something happens where they try to ram through some sort of concessions, I mean, I see people resisting that, but at the same time, it seems like, a kind of wall has been breached in this struggle, and I'm just curious if you can just kind of, any thoughts on just the historical significance of the past couple weeks with this?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm being honest, the struggle that we've seen now has gotten to a point where I think, if I'm talking like fear of establishment, that underlying fear of establishment that I think we kind of saw in the 2016 election, where people were so willing to put faith in anti-establishment characters simply because they're anti-establishment, has now led people to say, well, we just don't trust any type of establishment. And so the big business unions like NEA or AFT, they've relied on their traditional structures for so long to maintain them. You know, people who have been in those unions their entire lives are questioning why they have to pay hundreds of dollars in dues to some organization that seems to be bargaining away their rights. And even though, and I'll be honest, you know, those union leaders, soon after they realized what a bad deal they had made and what the outpouring of anger was, told county reps and county presidents, hey, listen, you know, if your county wants to stay out, let them stay out. Like, we're here to support you guys. They realized what power was there. So what I'm seeing is this movement from below, this grassroots agitation against these authority structures, is resonating across the country because people are finally realizing that when you want to make a change in your community, in your state, in your country, you at this day and age, in our late stage of capitalism, you can't rely on the old, traditional forms of electoral politics. And I know I keep referencing that, but you know, from what I've seen with some of the support, like the strike in the UK, or I'm hearing talks now that Tennessee teachers want to strike and Arizona teachers want to strike, that they're taking up this banner on themselves. They're seeing what can happen when you stay unified and you focus on that common cause and you don't rely on someone above you to direct you in that way. You work with the person next to you to find out what's the biggest issue right now, who else is facing this issue, and how can you make a change together.
Just to pivot back to this weekend, so there's a call for people to arrive at the Capitol in West Virginia to support, and there's going to be a rally. I'm just curious if you can say anything else, basically what's going to take place over the weekend, because I know you were saying that kind of what happens this weekend will determine the course of the struggle in the week to come.
So tomorrow, I think what's on the docket is the Senate Finance Committee is going to look into the numbers for the 5% pay raise and the proposed fixes for PEIA long-term. One of the discussions that our Senate President Mitch Carmichael has been pushing is basically taking the money that would go for the raise and using it to fill a hole in the public employees plan, using $56 million, just transferring it over that way. Because he's saying we simply don't have the money without to do otherwise. So this weekend is the important thing this weekend that's going to happen to be aware of is the Senate Finance Committee, what they decide on these bills. There may be a special session of the Senate to try to push through the pay raise and some type of long-term funding for the insurance plan. We're not entirely sure yet, but if the pressure is there, lawmakers are still in the Capitol this weekend, and they might be called for a special session on Saturday or Sunday to go ahead and vote, because what they're trying to do is expedite this process so that they can start out next week. In their plan, hopefully, is that schools will be open early next week. But if the weekend and nothing gets done, people realize that the Finance Committee is just kicking the can down the road for the next few days. They're using these stall tactics. Then probably what we'll see with this weekend is teachers trying to figure out what is their long-term plan? What is their long-term goal? And I mean, honestly, preparing for injunctions. The superintendents, though, and this was encouraging, the superintendents met at the Capitol today to meet with the Senate president and were furious. They were left waiting for, I think, like an hour and a half, according to some reports. And they all said, we're standing by our teachers. Our Board of Education's in the counties, they're standing by their teachers. And we're not going to request injunctions from county judges to be placed on these teachers. So this weekend is pretty much where Republicans decide, do you want this to continue into next week, or do you want to try to end it now and reach some type of compromise? If the Capitol's packed on Saturday and this momentum continues, there might be some type of compromise. But again, that compromise would then most likely have to go back to the counties, and they would then decide, what do we want to do? Do we reject this deal or do we take it?
Right. And to be clear, an injunction means that the state forces workers to go back to work, right, while they figure out a deal.
Yes. So what they could do is the Attorney General, Patrick Morrissey, could say, we're filing, he would give the authority to local representatives in the different counties to call teachers back to work and demand that the superintendents not continue to call off school. Because the thing that's happened that's prevented people from having to form physical picket lines to stop people from coming is the county superintendents have just called off school. So it just becomes sort of like a snow day. They could demand that superintendents stop calling off schools and that demand that teachers go to their places of work. And if they don't, report, those teachers could be fined, they could be docked pay, they could be suspended, they could be fired. Technically, under the precedent, they could be arrested, but the big difference is the act of something being unlawful and something being illegal are very different, and there's no criminal statute in my knowledge that says striking is illegal in this state. It says it's unlawful based on a 1990 precedent court case, but nothing that says specifically illegal. So in a hypothetical situation, if they were to file an injunction at the county levels, force teachers to go back, some people get arrested, they could then appeal further and further up the chain of command, possibly even all the way up to the National Supreme Court if it got that far. And in our day and age with the Janus case and the attempts to weaken labor unions across the country, this could sort of be a pivot moment where we see what are the limits of right to work in, you know, this neoliberal age.
And real quick, can you just explain the importance of what you brought up, right to work? What does that actually mean for people that may be not aware of what that phrase refers to?
So right to work is conservative reactionary branding as a way to break collective bargaining in states. Basically, what it means is, let's say you work at the local Kroger, for example. I know the Krogers in this state are unionized. And when I worked at Giant Eagle for a little while, I had to be part of the union there in order to work. Right to work means if you work at a union shop, and if you go back to the grocery store analogy, if you work at a grocery store that's unionized, in a right to work state, you don't have to be in that union to earn the benefits of being in the union. So it's a free rider problem. It allows people to get better benefits, better pay, without having to pay union dues. So fewer and fewer people tend to join those unions. That therefore weakens the unions financially. They can't spend as much money for political action committees. They can't spend as much money to help members legally. They don't have as great of a presence in the area. They can't have as much staff or legal representation. So right to work is a rebranding of a long, long history of reactionaries trying to break the collective power of labor.
You know, one last thing we want to ask is, a lot of people are asking, what can they do to support? And, you know, for both people that are able to maybe come down to West Virginia and participate in pickets or hopefully go to the Capitol, what can they do? And also for those that, you know, can't make the drive or go out there, what should they be doing? What do you think are some concrete material things that people can do to support?
Yeah, I'll be honest, there's many things you can do if you want to support us and you can't make it all the way to West Virginia. We have a few sites set up for a strike fund. There's one with GoFundMe, and I'll make sure to send you the link so you can post it. But there's a GoFundMe that was started by people in the state. There's a YouCaring link with the IWW West Virginia. They can go on Facebook and Twitter. The West Virginia IWW has pages set up to help agitate, so feel free to share, repost, comment, whatever you can do to raise awareness. We always love seeing pictures of people across the country and around the world supporting us. So if you have a picture and you want to show your solidarity, use our hashtags 55United, 55 Strong. That always helps. And if you want to bring up these issues while you're at work or with friends or family members, you know, if you hear someone talking about what's happening in our state, you know, try to put in context what's happening here. Try to use the momentum that we're trying to build here and take it back home with you. You know, agitate at your workplace. Look at some of those larger issues that are affecting you. You know, if this movement can somehow spread around the world and cause, and I know this is maybe far-reaching, but I'm hoping some type of global labor revolution in the workplaces, at the state level, wherever, use it. Help to educate other people in your area so that they can then become organized themselves and learn the lessons of what's happening in West Virginia.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on and giving us a brief update on what's happening. Anything else you want to say that we haven't covered? Sounds like this weekend's really going to show what's to come, but for sure, you know, history has been made. But anything else you want to talk about?
No, like you were just saying, just keep up to date with what's happening over the weekend. The West Virginia IWW Facebook page will try to keep everyone updated as best we can. The reporting we're getting from the secret Facebook United page, that's where we're getting a lot of our information. So check us out on our Facebook page and Twitter. You'll hopefully see a lot of cool updates over the weekend. And, you know, I hope it goes well, but I hope, but verify us.
Right. Hey, thanks so much for coming on, and best of luck to y'all. And as we said last time, you know, victory to the Strikers, and keep doing what you're doing.
All right. Solidarity from West Virginia.
His comrades who died, Tom Clark, McDonough, McDermott, McBride. And here's to James Connolly, who gave one hurrah and faced the machine guns firing Gomorrah. Now one of our leaders was down in Ringsend for the honor of Ireland to uphold and defend. He had no veteran soldiers but volunteers raw, playing sleep pause or music for Aaron Gubberaw. For Kent and his comrades like lions that day, from the South Dublin Union for death and dismay. But what was that of when the invaders then saw all the dead Kearney soldiers on Aaron Gubberaw? Got stuck in his jaw, and he died of lead poison on Aaron Gubberaw. A glory to Dublin, to a whore do renown. In the long generations her fame will go down, and the children will tell how their forefathers saw the red blaze of freedom on Aaron Gubberaw.